This is the Helen Hancock Podcast, episode number 33. Did you say Gordon Brown is in crisis, or did you say that the sky is blue? Emails, sleaze and politics. Is that news or just another week at Westminster scamming your way out of the credit crunch? And a recipe book from a very unlikely author. Podcasting live from London, this is Gary, Patrick and Heather, like kids on an Easter egg hunt searching things that have gone to hell in a handcart this week. Hello.
Hi.
Hello, here we all are.
Happy
celebrating Jesus' rise.
Oh yeah.
Zombie Jesus. Can you imagine now? I'd be like, oh my God, it's the night of the living dead. You know? Where obviously in those days, they'd never seen these zombie films.
Are you twittering again, Heather? Are you twittering in the old school?
Yes.
Oh, what a week, what a week. It's just been another one of those where you just look on the news and you say, are they making this up? Is this really what's going on in the world?
Yeah, all you want to do is read a book. Yeah. An old book at that.
Very old, with no mention of anybody current at all.
No.
nothing involving any of them politicians. Well, Gordon Brown's been engulfed in crisis again.
Reading your Bible then.
Oh, did you say Gordon Brown's in crisis, Gary? Or
yeah.
Did you say that the sky is blue?
He's in crisis. Apparently, a key aide has resigned and the Tories have threatened legal action over explosive leaked emails discussing how to attack senior Conservatives, including David Cameron and his wife, Samantha, with smears about their private lives.
Apparently, I'm getting a good image now of an email exploding on the screen.
Yeah, I think it's literally exploding.
Explosive, yeah, literally.
This is from Damon McBride. He's one of the Prime Minister's closest advisers, and he's quit over his exchanges with the Labour blogger Derek Draper, in which the two discuss setting up a website to publish scurrilous allegations about opponents. The idea was still being actively discussed until a fortnight ago, according to The Observer.
I mean, you know, this again, it's just sort of this like, oh, politicians planning to smear each other. I'm shocked.
But they got caught. That's the thing. They got caught doing it.
I personally find it less shocking that they're sort of plotting to smear their rivals and that they're claiming for bath plugs.
But, you know, I think the thing is that the spin on the story that I've heard so far has been that, you know, this kind of thing happens all the time. There's gossip everywhere. You know, all the journalists are constantly gossiping. And obviously each party has got all sorts of, you know, secrets about the opposition that they discuss with each other to try and figure out if they're true. But this, I think this is the first time anyone has been caught deliberately planning to, you know, a proper smear campaign.
It's just so out there, and some of the stuff, and we'll talk in a second about some of the allegations that that have been put around in the public domain today that may or may not be true. BBC Online goes on to say that emails discussing smearing top Tories have led to the resignation of that number 10 official. They say that the Shadow Home Secretary Chris Grayling said that the emails demonstrated a structured plan to publish lies about members of his party. So already they're starting to say this stuff is just made up.
Yes, and also, I mean, in a way, unless it's actual illegal or criminal activity, I think it's a bit shocking that Labour, who is supposed to be, you know, slightly left and slightly sort of accepting of people's lifestyles and things, would you know, think that it was appropriate to smear people by these sort of tatty allegations. And minor sex scandals.
I don't know about you, but ever since I saw that Samantha Cameron's tattoo, I knew there was something a bit dodgy.
What kind of tattoo has she got?
Oh, it's just the fact she's got one at all. Tusk.
I think it makes her a bit more interesting, actually.
Oh, controversial.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Where's your tattoo, Heather?
I'm not brave enough. It's good to put them in places where you don't have to show them, though, I think.
Yes. I think you need to be able to cover them up, especially when you're in that kind of position. But these scandalous allegations then, so this is, and I'm quoting these from the Daily Mail's online website. This is where, just like the first place I managed to find a few examples of the things that they're talking about. And again, we understand that they're slurs, and according to Paul Staines, none of them have any substance. First one, Mr. Cameron should be challenged to produce his medical records after admitting in an interview that he had visited a sexual diseases clinic when he was a student, and there is no suggestion that he had any treatment.
I love the idea of visiting a sexual health centre if you don't need treatment. You know, like you go for the day.
Yeah, it's like a spa.
See what it's like. Yeah, you know, why not?
Well, you never know.
It's a spa where you get your bits out, and that's about it.
But the thing is that that's a good thing to do. I don't see why that would be a slur or a scurrilous allegation. I mean, I suppose, I don't know, maybe they're hoping that there are so many Tory supporters that actually vehemently believe that you shouldn't have sex before marriage or something. I don't know. But to me, it's a good thing. I rather admire David Cameron, if that's true. That means he's being a responsible person and not spreading things around.
Mr. Osborne once posed for a photograph wearing a bra, knickers and suspenders with his face blackened. Oh my God.
Well, I mean, not going to get better than that, are you?
No, you're not. You're really not. There's no way of breaking that down and making it look good, really, is there? You know.
You would really think, it always amazes me when you read about these people blacking up for a laugh. It's like, you'd think in this day and age, something would kick off inside you and you'd realise that blacking up is never a good idea any context whatsoever.
My God, I'm such an idiot. I thought you meant that he covered his face so that you couldn't recognise him. Are you talking about blacking up?
Well, I think that's probably what they're hinting at here. I don't have any further details, and certainly they haven't given us a photograph.
This may or may not be true.
Yes.
Well, no, I'm sure it probably isn't, but you know, because that's just ridiculous, isn't it? That's just like as if, you know, two teenagers got together and said, oh, what's the silliest thing we can come up with? You know? I mean, a bit of cross-dressing. I'm sure lots of people get up to a bit of cross-dressing, but...
And the final one they publish here is a gay MP is using his position to offer free publicity to a high street company for which his boyfriend works. Oh, my goodness. I mean, you know, if he was just to speak about where his boyfriend works, is that likely to be called publicity?
I was going to say, how could he offer free publicity? I don't understand that at all.
I don't know. Maybe he was sitting on GMTV and started talking about a high street chain a lot that he goes to that his boyfriend works for. I doubt it. I don't think that happened, but...
I doubt it as well. And surely that, you know, GMTV or BBC or whatever wouldn't be happy with that either. They sound as if, actually, you know what? I think they're a bit pathetic. I mean, I think if there's anyone out there who's planning a campaign and they want to pass the emails on to us, you know, maybe they could come up with something better.
Yeah, I think when you actually come up with a rumour, if you're going to think about smearing somebody, there has to be two things there. That either has to be some element of truth so that when it comes out, you know, there is some public record that something happened at some point which is going to embarrass them. You know, you have to have that little element of proof. Or there has to be some plausibility. There has to be something in what you're making up that makes you just think, actually, that's, you know, probably true, even though there's nothing out there that can support the claim. There needs to be something that in your mind makes you just think, yeah, that could happen.
Don't you think it's a bit about, like, that it has to be in character? Do you know what I mean? That it has to be consistent. Like you're saying, it has to have plausibility. It has to be consistent with the way we know that person is.
Yeah.
That you can just imagine they would do this thing. Where I think these are all a bit crap, really.
I mean, when you look back in history and you look at, you know, some of the stories that have broken. I mean, if you remember the Edwinus Curry story of a few years ago when that one
cold shutters just
when you think about John Major and Edwina Curry in the same sentence, let alone the same bed, you know, you immediately you think, oh my God, that can't be true, that can't be possibly true. So that one didn't have the plausibility, but that one actually apparently turned out to be true.
Yeah, but the thing about that is I bet that journalists and people knew about it for years but just could never release it.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, so she finally did. But I think that's often the case, is that journalists know an awful lot, but for whatever reason, you know, it's just too delicate, as it were. But, you know, if they'd have released that as a piece of gossip, I think people, like you said, people would have said, "Hey, don't be ridiculous."
Yeah.
Whoa. That's just too silly.
Far too silly. The Prime Minister has made a comment about this, apparently. It says, "It is the Prime Minister's view that there is no place in politics for the dissemination or publication of material of this kind, which is why it is right that Mr. McBride and Mr. Draper took the decision not to publish this material, and regrettable that others are choosing to do so."
Ooh.
Regrettable. That's fighting talk.
So, that's just hilarious, isn't it, though? Like, the way he's making it sound as if they're really responsible citizens. Like, they made up these silly stories, sent emails to each other saying, "Oh, let's think about publishing these," and then decided not to. Oh, gosh, that's so responsible, isn't it? It's not like they came across them.
So jump onto our website, www.helenahankart.com, and send us your facts or your fiction. We're very happy to have either. We probably won't publish them, but it'll give us a laugh.
We'll sit around here just laughing. Don't worry.
Well, you know, you never know how much the Daily Mail paid for those emails. I'm just saying. There's no evidence that they paid, but, you know.
No.
I'm sure they had full investigative journalism on the way.
Patrick?
Yes?
You've won £500,000.
If only.
I want to send you the cheque, but in order for me to release that, I need you to send me £25 as the little administration fee. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. Shall I give you my bank details now?
Yeah, that would be great. And also your passcode, date of birth and mother's maiden name.
And maybe a blank cheque would be a good idea as well. Just like in with the £25 cheque.
Yeah, a clear copy of your signature as well.
Yeah.
Well, I'm seeing these news stories coming out this week about these scam letters. And I'm just thinking this is just sounding like the best route out of the credit crunch. If you're needing a bit of extra cash at the moment, you know, this is just the way forward, I think. So this is one of the news stories going around at the moment. Apparently, a scam letter scheme which could have netted an estimated £35 million a year has been smashed by officers from the Serious Organised Crimes Agency, SOCA. It follows a police raid on a Somerset address used to front the operation for the international scam. So apparently it's one of these things where people are actually sent a letter with like this quite an official looking document, actually. And basically they wanted you to send about £20 to them and they'll give you lots of money in return. So all you need to do is sign here and send us your money and sending it back. And you'd think that nobody would do this, but apparently people have been in their thousands.
Yes, it was 22,000, wasn't it? That
yep.
They found 22,000 cheques in this place.
Oh, God.
And so those people are going to get their cheques sent back in them with a little letter saying, you know, just beware of scams.
Well, see, this is the thing, you know, what we need is to get rid of our existing tax system and just put a tax on stupidity. It would, the revenues would triple.
Yeah, they should have just cashed these cheques and they should have just gone into the government's coffers.
Yeah, damn right.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's Patrick's point, isn't it? Tax on stupidity. So, because they're set, if you think about it, 22,000. Okay, 22,000 times 20. It's a lot of money. I can't think quickly enough as to how much that is. But it would, you know, it would be quite helpful in the tax, you know, especially at the moment, wouldn't it?
Well, 35 million a year would go down quite well.
But don't, is it just stupidity? Is
it really, well, it's greed and stupidity.
Because I was going to say, what about greed?
You see the same thing in the Guardian's money column. Like every week, and these are from sort of, you know, what you would hope would be well-educated people going, you know, "Oh, I've got a letter from, you know, the Dutch lottery saying I've won. I've never bought a lottery ticket and I've never been to Holland. Could it be true?"
No, you know, no, it couldn't be true. Don't be so stupid. It's, you know, I really cringe when I see like the TV news reports on this, and they always end with the same sort of payoff on these news stories, and that is, if you see something and it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. And, you know, they say these things time and time again, and you see people going, "Oh, I was just so silly, I can't believe I fell for it." Well, you did.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the only sort of time when I do feel, I mean, well, firstly, I sort of think that obviously the people perpetuating the scam are just hateful. But, you know, Patrick has got a point that they're also preying on stupidity and greed.
Yeah.
But I do feel bad when you see these, and inevitably on the telly when they have these stories, they always kind of wheel out some poor old person who's very vulnerable because they've got a slight bit of dementia, and they get the letter and they think it's real. And I mean, I do worry that there are, but I'm sure that's only a small percentage, but there will be a percentage of people who for whatever reason have like a cognitive deficit, so they think they see that letter and they think, oh, okay, I'll just do what it tells me, you know, and send the check off. And I mean, those, to me, that is, you know, really evil that those people do get preyed upon.
Yeah, but I guess there's also the thing here that we're only talking about 20 quid. And when you look across the social scale, to some people, 20 quid is a lot of money. And to 20 quid, it's just a punt. Well, maybe I could get something back. Maybe it's worth it. You know, it's no more than, you know, having a bit of a flutter on the horses or the football. So maybe I'll just have a go and see what comes back. It's only 20 quid after all.
Yes, but you'd have to be very stupid, you know. If you take that approach, you do have to be pretty stupid to actually think anything's going to come of it.
Yeah.
But then you see perfectly intelligent people sending on those emails and text messages that say, if you send this to 10 people within the next few minutes, your life will be fantastic. You know, everything will be all right. And, you know, Carol Smith didn't send the email on, and then very bad luck happened to her. You know?
I cured cancer by sending an email to 50 people. Didn't you know that?
Yeah. I just find, you know, and it is, sometimes when you receive those, they are from people who you know are quite intelligent. And you think,
oh, I know. That's what really scares me. Like, my lecturer at university will often send stuff like that around.
And you're like, kidding.
And you're just like, this is a scam. It's obvious. Not so much those ones. It's more like, oh, be careful, people have been stopped in the street and, you know, asked to wind down their car windows and they're shot in the face with acid, you know, those sorts of things.
It's just another form of virus, isn't it? It's just someone designs something and thinks, can we get this round the world as fast as we can? That's quite funny though. But it's, you do get these ones where people send this email that says, you know, I thought I should send this on to you because it's very worrying, and it is some ridiculous thing, isn't it, like that? Like, or like, yes, be careful because, you know, if you're in the underground and your mobile phone rings while you're on the tube. There was something like that, wasn't there?
Oh. If you're in the underground, your mobile phone rings, science has taken a great leap forward.
It's just ridiculous. None of those things really have the semblance of being true. But if you'd like to actually put an end to world debt and world hunger, please send the URL www.helenahancock.com to 15 of your best friends now, or your iPod will explode.
And send us a check. You forgot the check.
Oh, yeah, sorry. And send us a check.
The most important bit.
Sorry, for £20.
But as I said, Carol Smith didn't do that. And she had some very bad luck that day.
Yeah, her iPod is in pieces all over the floor and she's in tears. See what can happen.
I wish more of them were.
Oh, stop it.
Oh, God, you didn't stop that it now. iPod.
You press my button now, Gareth.
Especially as all of our many hundreds of listeners use their iPods to listen to us.
Yeah. So remember, you can send us your comments via the feedback button on the website www.helenahancock.com. Also send us your suggestions for topics for next week's show, either by using the website or Twitter, which apparently we might actually tweet on occasionally. And you can follow us there at Hell in a Handcart.
I think if we had hundreds of followers, I could think up some pretty good tweets.
Yeah. So start following us now. When we see the numbers going up, and then when you start following, we'll start leading. How about that?
Yeah. Lots of good things. Hands.
Lots of good things will happen in your life, and there'll be some really, really lovely flowers blooming as you walk along.
Join us in a peaceful new world.
Yes.
right here.
There'll be sparkly rainbows in the sky.
There were some Jehovah's in my area yesterday, speaking of them. And it was quite funny. I was walking to buy the newspaper yesterday morning, and there were a pack of about 8 of them getting out of a car, planning their tactics, like who would go where and who would say what. It's just unreal.
Do you know, they come to my door, and I just say to them, the thing is, you just don't have room, you know, because there's only, according to Jehovah's Witnesses, there's only 144,000 going into heaven.
They're already taken.
Exactly. So they just always look at you with astonishment when you say that, because I just say, well, you don't need me. You've got much more than 144,000 already. How can you have room? You know?
That's quite good. I'll have to do that next time.
It works, and they tend to just walk away and go, oh, okay. So they've got no room for me.
They probably get special training at Jehovah's Witness School on how to deal with that question. You know, it's like, oh, if someone says that, it means they're a nutter, so just walk away. Yeah. It means they don't understand.
I think if someone says that, it means that they know more about the religion than you want them to, so you better just walk away. I think that's probably more the point.
There was a knock on the door the other day here, and it was, guess what, Jehovah's Witness. And they opened the conversation, and I live, you know, up on not on the ground floor, so that you have to, you know, call my door entry phone to speak to me. So I didn't actually have to face-to-face anybody, so it's just like on the phone. A voice at the end of the receiver says, hello, we're just having a bit of a conversation with some of your neighbours about what you think about the credit crunch. I was like, I'm sorry, who are you? He says, my name is whatever it was, and I'm one of Jehovah's Witnesses. Click. It's like, thanks for calling.
I know, that's a classic, isn't it? You should have said, well, why don't you listen to our podcast?
Maybe they had important thoughts about the credit crunch, Gary, that you've...
I'd love to know what my neighbours think, but you know what? I'm not going to have that debate with him on the doorstep.
Yeah, and your neighbours probably think stupid stuff anyway. I meant in general, not your neighbours in particular.
I don't know. I think the Acorn profile of my street is pretty good. So I think they probably, you know, would think along the same lines as me. I'm guessing. So normally
Acorn profile, Mr. Marketing.
Hi there. So normally when we want to move on to another story, we do this big setup. We tell you what we're going to talk about, and usually read something from the newspaper so you understand the background of the story. You're in abroad as opposed to in the UK. But I think this is a story that probably everybody the whole world over can identify with. And Patrick has just summed it up in 6 words. Bloody kids filling up workers' trains.
Oh, this week. It's like... I've been, you know, I work hard, I slave, I pay my taxes.
Yeah.
And I would like to be able to travel home in peace. But no.
What's the
problem?
Parents
seem to think that just because it's half term, they have a right to fill workers' trains with kids. Get the train at 4:30, not 5:30. What's your problem?
It's been a bad week.
We stay off the trains all day to pay your child benefit. I'd like to ride the trains all day.
Okay, right, Patrick. So is this another group to add to your...
Yes, to the apocalyptic wasteland, the devastation once I take power.
Yeah. But if you're using other forms of public transport, I mean, buses tend to be emptier in the mornings, I think, when it's
I love it. Yeah, and I love holidays. It's the
and
best.
On the roads as well, you know, people come into the office and say, you know what, it takes me 45 minutes to get to work and it took me 12 this morning.
Yeah, that's what my life is like during school holidays. I love it. It's much better.
Yeah.
So it's just inconvenient for you, Patrick.
Yes. When I did catch the bus, when I used to catch the bus to work, you really did notice it. And again, it's all these idiotic parents in central London. This is when I lived in Camberwell. So, you know, very central London, driving their fat kids to school. You know, get out and walk.
Well, it does make you realise how many people drive their kids
to
school.
It is shocking, isn't it?
Yeah. It does make you realise that when it's so quiet. I mean, obviously, there are other reasons because, you know, some people probably take that time off work at the same time and they would normally be driving to work. But equally, there's an awful lot of people driving their kids to school.
Yes. And the thing is, I think it was just one of my mum's real bents that, you know, you should get off the trains to let the workers get home. You know, it was really drilled into me as a kid. You know, I can remember being in the city with her during school holidays and saying, you know, we have to get the tram now because otherwise the workers will need the space. And, you know.
Oh, bless her.
Yeah.
That's so sweet. But, you know, I actually think that just logically, why would you get peak hour trains? If you're in town all day and you need to get back home, why not go before peak hour, as you said, or go after?
Well, I think the government, the current government, as opposed to Patrick's new cabinet, the current government are actually all in support of what Patrick's saying on this. Because when you look at things like the Freedom Pass, that, you know, where you can get free access to the bus if you're over 60, you're not allowed to get on the bus before 9 o'clock in the morning. But can you see them queuing up at 5 to 9? Oh, yes.
But Ken wanted to take that away. You know, I think Boris had the sense to stop it. But, you know, and it's not often you'll hear me say Boris and sense in the same sentence.
He wanted to take away the 9 o'clock
rule. The restriction,
rule.
Yeah.
No, that should stay. They shouldn't. I don't think the Freedom Pass should be allowed to be used before 9:30 in the morning. And probably it should be suspended probably between about 4 and 7 in London.
Yeah.
You know, and you
although, yeah, but it's not a problem, though, I think. I mean, I definitely agree with you with the morning thing, because, you know, I'm bad enough for sort of waking up, you know, at 7 a.m. even when I'm not having to go to work. But I suspect that once I'm old enough to use a Freedom Pass, I'll be even worse, and I'll be sort of dressed and ready to leave the house by 7. So I can just see that, you know, a lot of old people are like that. They want to sort of get out and get on the bus at 8 o'clock
in the morning. Good grief, Heather, that's mental. You know, I'm going to not get up before 11 when I don't have to.
You say that, but I mean, I think it is an old people thing. And so I don't think they tend to. My experience is that it's not too bad in the afternoon because then everyone's kind of home by then, you know, all settled down. But, Yeah.
It's the same at lunchtime, you know, if you
just general despair.
If you go to the supermarket at lunchtime, I'm sorry, why do these people have to be in the supermarket at lunchtime when, you know, if they're, you know, elderly, you know, they can go at any point. I mean, I don't understand. I'm not telling them they should keep out of my way, but I don't know why they would want
yes,
to.
Are.
I kind of am. I just don't understand why they would want to be there. Why they would want to go in these rush hour times. Why they would want to be in the supermarket.
You know,
like on the weekends, well, on Saturday, the most horrible day to go to the supermarket when you only go if you absolutely can't go at any other time, and yet it's full of old people. You know, what are you doing? Why are you making your life more unpleasant?
And mine.
But do you ever find yourself, like, with this overwhelming desire just to say, you know, I get into the queue, like you're saying, Gary, at lunchtime, and you're in the supermarket quickly trying to buy a sandwich or whatever. You get in the queue, and I just sometimes feel so desperate to say, listen, I have to get back to work. You know, like trying to jump the queue somehow, because you can see all these people who clearly are just wandering about and they've got the whole day.
Oh, that driftless, aimless wandering. Oh my God, it's so prevalent. You just think, you know, what are you doing? What are you doing with your life?
But I would probably aimlessly wander if I had the whole day and nothing else to do. But when you have to get to work, you do get this, you feel really sort of strongly that you just want to get through and get out, don't you?
And especially like, oh, it's my right to have a chit-chat with the cashier as well about my endless life. Oh, no one cares.
Oh dear, the endless life.
And the worst place...
Do you know some immortal people?
Yeah.
But the worst place is the post office for this, though. You go in the post office and you just actually want to post something, and there's this queue of people who obviously have nothing else to do in their day but be in queues in banks and post offices. They want to do everything. They want to exchange their money, they want to get, you know, euros for their holiday, they want to do everything but actually post something.
I know, it seems like that's almost the secondary purpose of the post office these days.
It drives me crazy.
Because I'm sure I had this rant to you a few weeks back when I went to the post office. I got there at 9:01 on Monday morning. I was home from, I was working from home.
Sounds like it.
To post parcel. There were already 6 people in the queue in front of me, all collecting their benefits. And you're like, well, good grief, you know. You can get up for 9 to get your benefit. You know, try getting up to get a job.
Ooh.
Oh.
And you can send Patrick your comments on that comment to the website helenahancock.com.
Yeah, they'll be deleted. <'Cause I'm right. laughs>
Oh dear, thank goodness you don't have admin rights. And finally, and this is, I when I read this, I was just stunned. I could not believe it. It's just the one of the most unbelievable things. But
was your
gobsmacked? It really was. I was flabbergasted. Mm-hmm. Apparently, the supermodel turned fashion designer Kate Moss is keen to add another string to her bow, and has reportedly been inspired by her boyfriend Jamie Hintz to write her own cookery book.
Oh, that's different.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, woman that doesn't eat writes cookery book. What the hell?
Yes, I mean, I think maybe she just enjoys looking at the recipes and imagining what it might be like to eat something. So maybe it's like a fantasy.
She's just
cookbook.
Naturally thin, like some of them.
I thought the most supermodels, I thought their diet book...
You're all just haters. Haytaz.
I thought that most supermodels, their cookery book consisted of a bottle of Evian and a packet of fags. I thought that was it.
And is there some lettuce, Lee?
What's your problem?
No, you have a bit of lettuce for your greenery.
Okay. Well, apparently the idea for the book is said to have come about after the model read A Simple Guide to Cooking Traditional Jewish Meals, written by Topshop boss Sir Philip Green's stepdaughter, Sasha Palos. Mm. Apparently a source close to Kate says that she's recently cooked Jamie a Jewish meal following kosher techniques from Sasha, and... it's all she's been talking about.
Well, that would be quite easy. No milk and no meat.
Oh, we'll cover that one then.
A lettuce leaf, in fact.
But, you know, when you look at some of these recipe books, and you think, you know, how do these people come up with these ideas, and will it work? Do you think she'll make even more money from this?
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
I'm sure. Yeah.
Every young girl on there. Well, and I suppose Kate Moss, I mean, she's only a couple of years younger than me. I think she's about 35, isn't she? So maybe she's not quite as popular with the kids as she was when we were younger. But, you know, I'm sure it'll sell well.
Yeah. So it could be in the bestsellers list very soon.
Another news story today is about how there's been this plan put forward for the NHS to pay you to lose weight, and apparently you will get paid £5 per pound. So I'm thinking of going to my GP. I've got a plan. Like, I was trying to work out this morning how much I could earn.
doesn't that just tell you everything that's wrong with the welfare state in a single sentence? You know, like, people who eat healthily, do the right thing, are just dumped on, while these scummers who sit around, you know, eating chips all day, are then paid money. It's just unreal.
Well, no, you're not paid it unless you lose the weight, though.
Yeah, but I bet it's not, you don't have to pay it back if you put the weight back on.
You have to keep it off for about, the proposition is that you have to keep it off for quite a while. I think it's well over a year before they actually give you the cash. So, no, I'm looking forward to it.
Can it work like, because I'm already underweight on the BMI, if I became morbidly underweight, would I qualify?
I would think that if you were like, I don't know whether they'll pay you to put weight on.
No, I mean if I lost even more weight.
Oh, no, I imagine you have to be over the BMI, I'm sure.
That's always a catch.
But they might pay you to put it on to become in the BMI. You never know. You could you could propose it. It might be a money-making scheme.
I'll just propose them to buy a couple of treadmills and the surgery.
I'm sorry, it just segued from Kate Moss there, but I just thought, you know, it's kind of, I can see people buying the cookbook, you know, gullible people, the same people who've sent their check for £25 off to the Dutch lottery, thinking that somehow they'll learn how to lose weight by making honey cakes.
When you look at the best-selling cookbooks of the moment, though, the top 10 on Amazon, a couple of them are about chocolate, about three of them are about cakes, and only about maybe three out of the top 10, I would say, are probably really aimed at getting you to cook, you know, better food for yourself. The number one is called Four Ingredients and is surprisingly a book about how to make a meal using only four ingredients. Clever, huh? Jamie's got one in there as well, how to anyone can learn to cook in 24 hours. But my favourite out of all of the books in here is at number 9, and it's called How to Feed Your Whole Family a Healthy Balanced Diet with Very Little Money and Hardly Any Time, Even If You Have a Tiny Kitchen, Only 3 Saucepans, Unless You Count the Garlic Crusher.
I know, it's great, isn't it? It's
actually a book.
Great term. Yeah, no, I've heard about that.
But actually, there is one in there, the 101 One-Pot Dishes Tried and Tested Recipes from BBC Good Food. It's one that I have on my bookshelves, and I would actually seriously recommend it. It's a really good book. It's a tiny little book, only about £4, but it has got some really good and easy things to make in there, and they really are delicious.
And there's 101 of them.
101. Yeah. So if you bought it today, it would get you through until after the summer. How about that?
So are you using your influence to publicise a particular book, Gary?
I just did, didn't I? We should put a link to that book in the blog, as I've just sold it so well as well, and we should probably try and make some money off it as well.
Money for the author, who happens to be a good friend of yours, is that what you're saying?
Sorry?
No, I'm just being silly.
Yeah, I actually wrote it. No. I wish. Oh, dear. All right, I guess we should wrap this up. You can send us your comments and your thoughts via the website to www.helenhancock.com. Tell us which recipes you made from the book and follow us during the week on Twitter. Our name there is Helen Hancock. It's clever, isn't it?
Who'd have thought?
I know. And if we remember to broadcast live via TalkShoe next week, we'll put the schedule up there for you as well.
Ah, I was wondering what was missing from our call. It was a lovely TalkShoe lady.
Yeah, I forgot that this week.
But please press the pound key.
It's because we're recording at a regular time this week as well.
It all goes to pot,
doesn't it? And I guess that'll do it for this week.
And it is another week closer to the grave.
Have a good one.
Bye.
See you. Bye. Well, 35 million a year would go down quite well.
There's no evidence that they paid.
Did you say Gordon Brown's in crisis, Gary, or did you say that the sky is blue?